Gig session number 10478, Rule 3.
Commodore, dear Rule 3.
Air superiority, of course, was vital to the Germans to guarantee reasonable safety of their troops across the Channel, albeit they still had to beat the Navy. But our Navy would have done, of course, as we all know, a marvellous job, but without air cover would have been pretty much at the receiving end of the full might of the German Air Force. We knew that, but beyond that, we didn't really think, to be honest.
Was there any kind of sense of outrage at German planes violating British airspace?
No, not a sense of outrage. I mean, there was a war on, and we expected them to do it, and that was it. I mean, that's war, isn't it?
Was the Battle of Britain fought in what you might call a gentlemanly way, or were there any tactics which were employed which were thought to be unfair by either side?
Well, I don't suppose you can really call any combat, whether it's the ground or the air, gentlemanly, but it was a straightforward shooting match as such. And so far as I know, there were no incidents, which I have read about in papers since and heard people say, that people were shot at it in parachutes and shot on the ground. Well, I don't think they were. I certainly didn't see anybody shot at in his parachute, nor did I see anybody shot at on the ground having crash-landed. I don't believe there were on either side. But somebody may disprove that one. I don't think so. It never occurred to one to shoot a chap. I saw a German I shot jump out in his parachute. It never occurred to me to shoot him, and he'd made his escape, and that was that. You'd got the aircraft, which was the important thing. Generally speaking, when you're in combat, you weren't thinking of the chap. You were thinking of the aircraft. I've got to get that aircraft.
Could you ever see the pilot you were fighting against?
Well, I did on the occasion at Dunkirk I told you about, when I stayed behind this 109. I could see him looking around at me, you know, and saying, almost hear him saying, God, he's still there. That's the only time.
Were you ever introduced to any of the shot down German pilots in Britain?
Well, not introduced, but one pilot who was shot down was brought into the Hornchurch mess. I didn't personally shoot him down, but he was shot down. He was brought into the Hornchurch mess because he was recovered somewhere nearby, and we all went in and had a look at him, so to speak. And it so happened one of our number could speak fluent German, one of our pilots. And I always remember him saying that whoever this chap was had said to him, well, he wasn't too worried because he'd be a prisoner of war and soon the Germans would be over to take him home. This was in 1940.
Did you personally feel that the Germans could ever win the Battle of Britain?
Oh, yes, my word. Oh, yes, I did. You see, the pilots was the big... Pilot shortage was acute in the end.
Did you feel that the Germans might actually invade?
Always thought they would invade, provided they could establish a reasonable air superiority. But they hadn't done that, you see. They were much closer to it, I think, than they thought they were. Mind you, they'd had some losses, and they were tired too. They'd been fighting all the way through. And they must have had a lot of serviceability problems on temporary airfields, all that sort of business. But it was a pretty close-run thing. I don't know, you know, it really was, because I gave you an example of my squadron. We were reduced by the end of August to, I think it was four, maybe even three of us who were experienced, had gone through the whole show, Dunkirk and the lot. Well, other squadrons were similarly placed, and so you were virtually fighting, at that time, a war with very inexperienced chaps. And that could only get worse, progressively worse.
Your home was on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
To what extent in the Battle of Britain did you feel that you were fighting for home?
Well, I think the answer to that is easy. In my generation, in the 30s, as schoolboys, we always thought of this as the home country. Always referred to it as a mother country, and that was the old colonial tie, if you like, and I think I'm right in saying, without boasting, that New Zealand, of all the old dominions, was the strongest in that sense. And there was no question of if this country was threatened, that a New Zealand of the right age wouldn't go to war for England or for Britain. In fact, they did, as you know.
When were you next in combat after the Battle of Britain?
Well, I commanded a squadron. I was taken off after the Battle of Britain for from October till about December, January, and then I was sent to take a squadron in Scotland, which I flew down to to Kinley in Surrey. In about March 1941, to go into combat again. And I stayed with that squadron until the end of the year on offensive operations over Europe.
What did those operations actually
involve? Escorting bombers and fighter sweeps, generally, you know, imposing ourselves on the Germans to try and get them. You know, the boot was on the other foot now. We were trying to commit their air force because they, by that time, had a war on the other front.
Did they respond?
Oh yes. Well, it was they occupied those countries. They had to, and we were bombing the sea railway yards and things like that. Yes, they did respond. Yeah.
How did it compare with the Battle of Britain?
Well, it was different. I mean, they were defending and we were attacking. It was and we found it a bloody sight harder attacking, being all the way from home, well into France and Belgium and places.
How far into the continent could you go?
Well, we couldn't go very far. We could go just short of Paris or mostly around the 15 to 20 miles inland, you know, Rouen, Lille and places like that were the bombing targets.
And was it enemy fighters or enemy flak, which was the biggest problem?
Both. The flak didn't worry us too much. We were fairly high, but it was frightening flak. More frightening than effective. But the fighters, German fighters, were good.
Did you stay on Spitfires all through the war?
All through the war, right up to D-Day. I flew my last operational sortie on D-Day over the beachhead.
Can you tell me how the Spitfire changed in the course of the war?
Oh, it changed principally in engine power and firepower. Eventually it got a Merlin 66 engine, which gave it considerably more horsepower. And of course it got two cannons, 20mm cannons in the wing to replace four of its machine guns, and so it remained with four Brownings and two 20mm cannons, and altogether a more lethal weapon. And certain it got two radiators because it was more powerful and needed more heating, bigger engines, better performance. But it remained basically the same airframe.
So as the war progressed and the German fighter opposition improved, Which became the most feared German fighter that you had to operate as things improved beyond the ME-109?
The Focke-Wulf 190. Marvellous aircraft. Only matched it when we got the Spitfire 9B. Up till mid, or the end of 42, really, throughout 1942, the Focke-Wulf remains supreme, really. And then we got the Spitfire 9 series, specifically the 9B, which had a rated altitude of 22,000 feet. The 9A, which preceded it, had a higher rating altitude, but it didn't have the same performance as the 9B. I think I'm right in saying the 9A was about the same speed as the Focke-Wulf, about the same speed. But at rated altitude, the 9B had 30 miles an hour on the Focke-Wulf and retained its manoeuvrability. So it wasn't until we got the 9B we were able to match the Focke-Wulf, and that wasn't until in early 43 we got them. Because I went to the Biggin Hill Wing to become the wing leader there in 43, and we got equipped with 9Bs. And that's when we really were able to match the Focke-Wulf.
Do you remember the first time that you came across a Focke-Wulf 190?
Yes, I managed to... I was up... by this time, this was in... 42, I'd done another tour, and I was on a staff duty job up in Newcastle in Yorkshire, and I was keen to get back to flying, and I was given permission to go down to Biggin Hill to attach myself to the Biggin Hill wing for do a few operational trips to keep my hand in, and they had 9As at the time, and I was very lucky on about the second sortie I did. We were interceptors from Focke-Wulfs, and I managed to pick one out and shoot it down. So that was the first time I'd seen a Focke-Wulf in combat, and I was lucky in the sense that it was below me, and it was by itself, you know. And I was by that time by myself. We got split up, and so I was a bit lucky there. Well, that's the first time I'd.
Where was that?
Just over the part of Kelly area, generally.
You said that you were actually involved at D-Day. Can you tell me the background to that?
Well, I was commanding... I was asked for by the Free French Air Force to command their wing of Spitfires to take them into France, because when I was the wing leader at Biggin Hill in 1943, I had two French squadrons under me. And they made a special request, and so I was... sent down to lead their wing up to and including D-Day, and so that's how. And then I was taken off straight away and put on into the planned side of the Tactical Air Force. So I went over, but I didn't actually fly anymore.
What's actually happened on D-Day to you?
Well,
personally?
We didn't see anything. It was a very bad. The weather was very bad. We went over as cover. It was a marvelous sight to see all those ships and. Colossal armada of ships and things. Absolutely. The weather was very poor. We were low cloud. We just flew along the beachhead. We didn't see anything. But the weather was too bad, I think, for the German Air Force. They hadn't reacted quite at that stage, anyhow.
Do you know which beaches you flew over?
Well, over the British, the bridgehead, where the British beaches were, just north of Caen.
What were the French pilots like?
Oh, very good. They were very good. They were a bit excitable in the air, you know, if you got into combat or they sighted something, they tend to get a bit excited. And I used to say to them, you're not to use the RT under any circumstances unless it's an emergency or if you've got a real sighting. But having said that, I got on very well with them. I couldn't speak a word of French. But, of course, they all had to speak English, and they did. I got on very well with them. They were a splendid bunch of chaps, really. Now, I haven't really any more to say, except that I think I was one of the very lucky young New Zealanders who was in the Air Force at the time of the last war, and the Battle of Britain in particular, and I consider myself privileged to have been there to fight for this country, and I've always made that point clear to anybody. It was a privilege as much as anything, and I had a hectic round, so to speak, but it was all worthwhile.